the challenge, we give the game our all. With sheer determination, we're going for the ball. For the Cloud Thunders, go Cats, we break the banner down. We know they'll play with courage till the final siren sounds. And the rival team will know that they've been run down by a pack. But you're eaten by, beaten by, defeated by the Cats. In a cat attack, go Cats, a cat attack, Geelong. A cat attack, go Cats, a cat attack, Geelong. In a cat attack, go Cats, a cat attack, Geelong. A cat attack, go Cats, a cat attack, Geelong.
Welcome to the Cat Attack Podcast, a 3-0 start to the year for the Cats. Wow, it does not get any better than the 3-0 start, and it's been quite extraordinary. Ben Castagnoli with you, and I'm joined by K-Rock's number one caller. In fact, there's daylight to the second caller. It's a wink-style operation here at K-Rock. Tom King joins me.
Hello,
King.
Cass.
You've been, well, you were over there firsthand. I only saw them on the TV, the Cats, but were they as impressive in the flesh as they were on the Idiot Box?
Best win of the year.
It was.
Yeah, I know they've got a small sample size, but off a five-day break to find themselves being rushed at the way they were in the third quarter and to hold their nerve and then pull away and win in the end. I reckon from 10 minutes out from the final siren, you probably thought Geelong have done enough. That was probably the best part of it. They never let Adelaide get in front. That was key. If Adelaide had got in front, those 45,000 fans would have probably got them over the line, but Geelong were always able to just find a way to hold up down back. They were outstanding defensively, but what was the best part of it was the midfield worked so hard back. And there were two examples, Joel Selwood and Sam Menegola, both going back with defensive spoils at just crucial times that proved pretty much in the end very, very handy.
Yeah, that was, you know, I remember both of those spoils. I think both of them were in the first half, they may have been.
Yep.
Look, it was a really, really strong performance. And I had to agree with the coach, Chris Scott, and you well aware that I haven't...
You don't always see eye to eye?
No, I've never questioned his coaching. I've questioned things outside of coaching, but... Anyway, we'll move on from that. But what I did agree with it when he spoke about it in the press conference was at three-quarter time, there were plenty of reasons why the Cats could have just sort of folded up. You know, they'd been competitive for three quarters.
Yep.
They're coming off the five-day break. They had a reasonably inexperienced side. Some of those kids, Gary Rowden hadn't done a whole lot till three-quarter time.
No.
Myers had been okay. But it was plenty of reason why you could have walked off with a three- or four-goal loss and then still taken something from the game. And they didn't. They ended up with a three or four goal win, and it was the fact that it was the kids played a part. Myers, you know, his three goals were really crucial. You know,
he did put Mitch Duncan in the Burns unit with the last one.
He did actually. He needed to kick it on his left. I don't know that I've ever seen him kick the ball on his left though. Can he kick it on his left?
Don't think so.
So that's probably why he couldn't centre it, because it would have taken an extraordinary Bunana to get it back to Mitch Duncan. But yeah, that was. I mean, I wonder whether they show that vision to him. And he did kick the goal. I mean, do they just say, because from what I've seen of him, which is a really limited, a little bit in the TAC Cup, and then obviously a little bit at VFL level and then the three games, his goal sense in general play is amazing. His capacity to kick a goal, his set shot, I know he kicked a really nice set shot, and we might just talk about that in a minute, but his set shot routine is all over the show. He's not a penetrating kick.
No.
But on the run and in general play, like the little snap he did, he was never going to miss that.
No.
He just sized them up instantly, kicked it. The one on the run was a ripper. And then the set shot, we've seen him veer out to the right horrendously with set shots. Now, I don't know whether because he was hemmed in on the right hand, in the right hand pocket, whether he didn't do that, but he actually ran straight from my eye. So it was a little difficult to see on the TV because you were side on, but he seemed to run straight.
Straight, no, he did.
And he kicked the goal.
Yep.
So I wonder whether they've worked on that. It'll be really interesting to see if he gets a set shot in a different part of the ground this weekend as to whether he continues to run straight, because that was a really nice kick. It just had a bit of draw on it and through. So, the thing that's really sort of impressed me and impressed Geelong fans just speaking to them is the energy with the team is playing.
Yep.
From Joel Selwood, Tom Hawkins, Harry Taylor, down to Grant Myers, Charlie Constable and Jordan Clark, they're all playing with an energy and it seems to be an enjoyment factor. Now, I haven't spoken to anybody in particular, but I don't know that has been there in previous years. It seems to have been a bit of hard work.
Yep.
Even the victories were, thank God for that. Now they seem to be really celebrating the victories.
It's like there's a load off the shoulders for some reason.
Yeah.
And what is it?
Well, I think it's...
Has the demeanour at the top changed?
Well, that's my point. I wonder. It'd be great to...
And that did that health check that Brian Cook did, and he said there were 30 things, 30 tweaks he was going to make. And we have heard, and I've heard anecdotal evidence that the coach has spent a bit more time with the younger players. There's some talk that he's played a bit of golf with some of the boys who are your golfers. Maybe just that health check is Cookie's gone. You need your... Just the management style. Just need to make a couple of slight adjustments.
Well, I think I don't even know if it needed to be slight. I think it needed to be.
Did you need a seismic shift?
I don't know if it's seismic. I think there needed to be a significant shift.
I like seismic.
Yeah, seismic.
It's up there with ointment.
Ointment is good, and seismic isn't too bad. I think there needed to be a significant shift, and that's what I've always been critical. The word out of Geelong was that the interpersonal skills and the relationship building between coach and player was not where it needed to be to get the best out of a young group of men.
And Chris Scott was on the ground again post-game.
They haven't seen that. So that's happened twice in 3 weeks. And the first, I actually didn't see that. They didn't show a whole lot of that on the TV coverage.
No.
Round one, he got around to players that I hadn't seen him get around to before.
Yep.
And they seemed to be, there seemed to be a warmth in return.
Yep.
Previously, it's maybe gone to Dangerfield and Selwood, and that was about it. But now he seems to be getting around the group. And, you know, like, it had to happen. Well, something, if that indeed has what's happened, it had to happen.
Especially because he's going to be there for another 4 years.
Exactly. But it also hadn't, what the theories and the philosophies and the principles and the plans he'd put in place previously hadn't worked. Geelong had fizzled completely when it counted. In most years, recently. So, I wonder whether he took a lead from Nathan Buckley, who you know, it's been spoken about quite publicly, did the same thing last year. Changed his demeanour, I mean, I heard a little story about Nathan Buckley, and this is only a tiny little snapshot, that somebody asked about Nathan Buckley's demeanour around the club. This is last year, this is not this year. And... somebody sort of really low down in the pecking order in the club, they didn't hold any sort of lofty position, was saying that he would come in and ask if they wanted a coffee and he would go and get them a coffee. Now, that's only a tiny little thing.
Yep.
But those little things all add up at the end of the day. The water cooler conversation, the, you know, have you got a girlfriend? Where are you living? How's your dog? How are your mum and dad?
Yep.
It might only be 2 or 3 minutes, but they're what builds. And I'll never forget Brett Ratton saying when we had him on K-Rock a couple of years ago, and he was sort of asked the question along the lines of what, you know, would you have done anything differently in your time at Carlton, now you've had time to reflect on it. And he said, I didn't put enough importance on the water cooler conversation.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think there has been that many water cooler conversations at Geelong between player and coach. And then it may not be that that still isn't a huge part of his weekly routine, but there had to be a shift. There had to be a change. And after 3 rounds, I don't know whether I can't categorically say that that has happened, but just from the outside looking in, it seems like something's happened.
Yep. Absolutely. Long may it continue. If the Cats are going to play footy like this, and there just seems to be a freedom about them. They appeared robotic in previous years.
They did. We've mentioned it a few times. Everybody's bought in. Gary Ablett's doing things off the ball. He's chasing. Now, it's never been a huge part of his game. He's been such an offensive player. So he's feeding off the likes of Myers and the likes of Tommy Atkins and
Dalhouse.
And what I like is that, and we had somebody on one of the social media forums last week mention the fact that it was along the lines of the players know their role. Previously, even the fans, you'd think, well, why is he up forward, or why is Colajasny on the wing, or, you know, why is Mark Blitzoff suddenly in the ruck? He's been so good down back.
Yep.
All these things.
He did play a little bit further up the ground.
As a defensive player, though.
Yeah.
That was his role. Yep. So I'm happy with that because that's his strength, his
capacity.
He's a good defender. And he actually reads the game quite well as a defender. And then he's got the capacity, because he's so aerobically gifted, to actually get across an impact. We saw it a couple of times. He's quite brave with that Mark Blitzarves in leaving his man and getting across to help. That's, it's going to go pear-shaped every now and then. Mm. But I think if you're getting it right 7 or 8 out of 10 you've as a defender, that's the percentage that you'd work with. So, but everybody knows what their role is. And, you know, forget the who tweeted it last week, who asked the question. But, you know, Dalhouse comes in. He knows what his role is. Mm. Gary Rowan comes into the club, knows what his role is. You know, Selwood now is embracing a slightly different role. I've got no doubt that might change when we hit June and it's cold and wet and some of the kids, you know, he's going to have to get thrown back in. But they can also then try and freshen him up coming back into finals if they've got the wins on the board.
Yep.
So Ablett's embraced his role. You know, Reece Stanley has stood up in three games.
And Reece Stanley got a rookie opponent and put the foot on the throat on Thursday night.
Well, it was a good test for him because it seems just in the, you know, from the middle of last year onwards, against the better players, he sort of set himself and did quite well. Like he didn't star, but if he's at least nullifying that ruckman or equaling their output, you take that. He and then potentially would drop off when he was against Bob Stringbag, who hadn't played a game. But you're right, he sensed a bit of a kill, it seemed, against Riley O'Brien and did that. And look, his form's been really strong in the first three rounds.
And he's got Shane Mumford this week.
The big mummy, the big sausage eater.
He's back.
He might have. How do you think big mummy would have reacted to old Dusty's little
retort? Little tap of the nose.
Mime on the half forward flank.
Yeah,
and you could lip read every word Dusty said.
You didn't need a degree in lip reading to do it.
No, you didn't. You could. Oh, I could say something right now that would get us the Canatech podcast completely taken off the air, so I won't. But
that would be nice.
Yeah, so Mummy, that's another really good test. Really physical ruckman. Stanley has not been known as a physical player, but has seems to have adopted a little bit. I don't think he's ever going to be the most physical ruckman, but really good test. And the Giants are up and about. It's a really big game for the Cats. I know it's really early in the season, but to go 4-0 and have the Giants at 2-2, have potentially Collingwood at 2-2,
Richmond maybe 1-3.
You've suddenly got breathing space already, and it means you're not going to win every game. So it means you can have that day off, which, day off.
Essendon are coming in 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, they'll probably have a day off there. And that's going to happen. But you can afford to have those, and it's not catastrophic for your season.
No. Do you want some questions?
Yeah, love questions.
Okay. Was wondering if you could fill us in who out of the rucks has been playing first ruck and who's been playing mainly as a forward in the VFL. Also, thoughts on Henry straight back in this week. I can take that one right now. Basically, it's Abbott and Smith doing most of the ruck work in the VFL. Buzzer and
Darcy Fort
have been playing majority forward. Is how it's been working.
Well, Buzzer's a forward.
Buzzer is a forward.
They've got those other three ruckmen, so he's...
But Fort, they're working on his forward craft just to add to his game. So the interesting thing is going to be at the end of the year, I suspect Zach Smith will be gone.
Do you think he'll be jettisoned?
Although this time last year, we were saying Reece Stanley was probably out the door as well. And,
true.
And Fett finds himself with a two-year deal and playing the best footy of his career. So, look, anything could happen between now and September with Zach Smith. But right now, Zach Smith is probably third in the ruck pecking order. If Stanley were to go down, I think Abbott's there.
That'd be interesting.
Their next
if Stanley
option.
Was to get injured, it would be really interesting to see who they pulled the trigger on as the second banana.
But they're very happy with Radigalia at the moment.
Do you know what? I really like what they're doing with Radigalia. Particularly seems early in the fourth quarter. He goes into the ruck to start the fourth quarter. And he's your worst nightmare as an opposition ruck. Mm. Because he's infinitely more physical than Stanley, and he's athletic. So he actually just jumps, and the knee has the potential to hit you fair in the cranium or straight in the side. And he just provides – his ruck craft isn't – he's not
– no, he's crash and bash.
Yeah, he's not Polly Farmer. But I think his role is he's just asked to give an absolute maximum effort for 5 or 6 minutes in the ruck to start the quarter. Reece Stanley comes on fresh and then he's allowed to utilise his athletic ability. But Radigalia in the ruck is, I reckon, he's not someone you want to play there permanently.
No.
But just his capacity to put a bit of the opposition ruckman thinking, oh no, this bloke is going to, Denise is going to put his knee in the back of my head and it's going to hurt and I just don't like it. So I really like that move. And like, he's just a developing player up forward, Radigalia. You're just going to have to push through the fact that he's going to have quiet games. You've got to try and get him to 50 games as quickly as you can.
Henry straight back if he's available?
I'd say yes.
Who for?
Probably Henderson.
Henderson wasn't bad against Adelaide.
He wasn't bad. No, he played okay. He looked a little rusty, but yeah. Look, I mean, this is the good problem to have, and it's a difficult one. This is where you create, dare I say it, you know, a team that goes deep into finals, because the competition for spots. You got Lockie Henderson, who's what played 170, 180 games of AFL footy. Mm. He's right now thinking, I need to bust my boiler to get a game.
He's out of contract at the end of the year too.
Yeah, we'll be interested to see what happens there. I mean, he's got bigger problems at the moment, and that's just trying to stay in the side. Now, you're looking at GWS with just what Jeremy Cameron and Finn Layson.
Who was a defender last year.
Yeah, and now he's gone forward. So Cameron and Finn Layson as their two forwards.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
Who's the? They don't really have a third.
Third, no.
So I'm not sure.
Oh, Himmelberg.
Oh, the HMA is Himmelberg, yep. Departing a port near you. he's more of an athletic sort of player that Collie Jasny could play on, or Henry.
Henry could.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
who do you go? Blitz after Cameron.
Is Henry definitely available again?
No. Well, not definite. Will be tested, but not. He should be right.
Cam Guthrie.
They're expecting him to play.
VFL?
Well, either level.
Zach Toohey?
I suspect they're going to just train him hard and not play him in the VFL, and they'll bring him straight back into the AFL side. They'll give him a training block.
Jed Buse?
Jed Buse will be the end of the month.
Who else have we missed out there? Has anybody seen Nakia Cockatoo?
Nakia, he might not play at all this year. And the club have said that.
What's his actual issue then?
Well, I'm not exactly sure.
Nobody knows. It must be a serious knee injury if you're going to be out for the year and it's only round three.
I think he gets going and then the body packs up on him. So,
but which regions?
Well, he's had the...
Because when I get going, there's regions of my body that pack up as well.
He's had the adductor issue.
Yeah.
He's had the knee issue.
What are they listing him as? Knee, wasn't it? I think knee.
Yeah. So.
So nobody actually knows. Nobody's actually from the club said Nakia Cockatoo has appendicitis, or he has a something-itis, or he has an Arnold-britis.
Britis.
So nobody's actually. Well, I just find that staggering.
It's very hard to pinpoint.
They won't say.
I spoke to Simon Lloyd yesterday, and I just said, I said to him, I won't bother asking about Nakia because I know he's not playing this week.
But could you tell me actually what's wrong with him?
I didn't ask that question.
Because nobody knows.
Well, I think...
Because you could put, you know what you could put if you find that out, can you? The exclusive.
No.
We found out what is wrong with Nakia Cockatoo.
Yeah, no, I just moved on. Lockie Fogarty's the other one we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, well, he's going to have to...
He'll spend some time in the VFL.
A lot. He may not get back.
Will Mark O'Connor be right? They expect him to be. They expect Tim Kelly to be right. He had the ankle scanned,
yep.
And it was a light sprain. The only thing I might think with Tim Kelly is if they might be, knowing they've got a 9-day break going into Hawthorn, they might actually go, we might use this opportunity to, not rest blokes, but just if there's somebody that's not right, they could wait.
Well, don't play him if he's not right.
Yeah.
But if he's right, play.
Scott Selwood's the other one.
Yeah, well, he's, what, another 2 or 3 weeks away?
Maybe a couple of.
He'll need a month in the VFL. Okay.
Yep. And then hope that the string doesn't go again.
Yeah. And poor old Jordan Cunico, unfortunately, looks like he's out for an extended period with the broken leg.
Ankle reconstruction.
Ankle, is it?
Yeah, so there was a break, but also the ankle has been reconstructed. Ooh, and they hope he'll play some footy at the back end of the year.
Yeah, well, his season is done in terms of senior footy.
He's out of contract at the end of the year too.
Yeah, not ideal. It's amazing how quickly things can ebb and flow in AFL footy. One injury and suddenly you're on the outer, and particularly when other players have suddenly jumped up. You know, you've got O'Connor jumping up, Atkins comes in, Myers jumping up, Constable jumping up, Jordan Clark. Suddenly players, while you're on the sidelines, players go past you. It's a brutal world, that one.
Cool Cat 75, very concerned that Cockatoo's body will never allow him to become an AFL footballer. We haven't heard much info lately from the club about his current situation. He just can't get his body right. That's what it basically comes down to.
Geelong drafted him on the back of one game, didn't they?
Yep.
And he'd had a lot of injury problems prior to that game. Yeah.
So maybe that was a red flag.
Might be.
Daz Broncos.
God, Daz.
To K-Rock's number one caller, that would be addressed to me. And the polka dot short-wearing barefoot master of ceremonies of the Carrick Footy World. Can you explain what you were wearing in the Carlton-Sydney commentary box?
Well, I was wearing they were shipped in from Milan, and they were just a polka dot sort of blue short arrangement that was just quality, really. And some of the... Mind you, Ian Cohen, who was sitting next to me, He was wearing, well, I'm not sure what he was wearing, but he's, do you know what he's going with, Ian? Do you know what?
Ian, this, you're on.
This is where you tread a fine line, I reckon. Do you know what he's wearing now?
Mm.
He's wearing the stupid socks. You know, they're just the stupid socks.
Really?
He's a grown man.
Yeah.
Like, he's going, oh, the kids were around. I'm thinking, yeah.
You're not a kid.
Yeah, don't. And yet he's got the audacity to question my setup. Quality pair of country road shorts I had on. And I just thought, looked across and he, you know, he looked like he'd been sort of lost in Belanglo State Forest, Gozer, for half an hour. Like he was in all sorts of trouble. So just don't wear stupid socks. I just haven't got into that trend. Just wear your normal run-of-the-mill blue arrangements.
Back to Daz Broncos. It would be a sparse collection of those that had us 3-0, and by sparse I mean none. I'll put my hand up and say that I was happy. I think I said on the record, Geelong were 3-3 after six.
Yeah.
That would be a good return.
Yeah, I wasn't 3-0. Wasn't being burst out of my lips pre-season.
Now, given the success of the four debutants, which is the better policy to adapt to regarding their development, preventative or reactive? Preventative in that we start rotating them out and resting them before a performance dip, or reactive in that we keep them rolling until the efforts and performance slip and we spell them.
I think the latter. I think you just
keep playing them.
Yeah, I think you keep playing them. And then, of course, they're going to have down days. And then you've got to weigh up whether they just had a down. I mean, you think Myers and Atkins are playing positions where some of the best half forwards in the game will have quiet days.
Starvation corner.
Yeah, so you may potentially, they'll be looking at, they potentially won't, the club I don't think would potentially be looking at goals or stats, or they'd be looking at potentially their GPS numbers, do they dropped off, how are they feeling during the week. But right now they're up and about. I'd be looking to get them through at least four or five games before I decided to give someone a rest.
To that point, Asava has been really important structurally, in my opinion, presenting and creating a contest in forward 50, allowing the ball on the ground to be pounced on by the smaller forwards and the pressure they are bringing. How long do we persist with him not taking the marks and only creating the contest?
Oh, well, that's part of his football development.
Yep.
And right now, his capacity to create a contest is what is good for the team. Hopefully in 2-3 years' time, when he's got the 50-60 games under his belt, he's taking marks and kicking goals. But the fact that he is creating the contest is what keeps him in the team. It's when you have the forward who's not creating the contest and then not getting a kick, there's really no value to the team. But his value is that he creates a contest, he's a competitive beast, and he could also go into the ruck. So his value to the team isn't going to be huge on the Kerr's stat sheet. It's going to be that he competes, and that's part of his football development. We're going to have to, the club will be embracing his competitiveness, and then hopefully that flows down the track with more experience into actually sort of stats and goals and marks.
Two questions from the Gov. From a list management perspective, it seems we have all bases covered apart from Keith power forward. Tom Hawkins is 30 and he has 4 years left in him. Power forwards do not grow on trees. With the 6-6 rule coming into effect, should the Cats look at Jonathan Patton? Too many injuries. Too risky. Yeah,
two knees, it?
Two knees. Yeah. Too risky.
Yeah, I would have thought.
Yep.
No. I mean, you've got Radigalia there as a forward. You are going to have to find another one. I'm not sure Wiley Buzzer is the answer there. Is he out of contract at the end of this year?
Yes.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure he's come on. I mean, Radigalia's gone straight past him. So, look, I think he can build it around Radigalia, and I mean, they've got young Kruger, who is a forward.
Been playing back.
Yeah, but that's just part of his development process.
Well, because there's no room up forward for him.
Well, I think, yeah, and exactly, and he'll be a forward. Mm. So they've got a young forward there now, so I wouldn't be pulling the trigger on John Patton.
Why did the Cats overlook Jai Bolton in last year's draft?
Well, they've got plenty of players of that sort of ilk. And
who are probably better quality.
Well, yeah, I mean,
nothing against Jai Bolton.
You could pick player out anywhere and say, why did they overlook him? I mean, but they've, so far, proof's in the pudding, and the Cats seem to, as the Gov mentioned in his tweet there, that they've got, seem to have most bases covered. So you can't take everyone. You've got to pick, to decide on certain players and go with them.
Foxdog50 put up the sliding in rule, the Tom Phillips on Jamie Cripps.
That was horrific.
Yeah, and put up the Dangerfield tweets. Contact below the knees, absolute disgrace. Don't put your head over the ball, kids, lower and harder. Nah, not anymore. Honestly, this rule in regards to going for the ball and then rewarding the player who they run into has to stop. 99% of football followers hate it. Is there any chance the AFL can abolish this rule? I would say that needs to be adjusted to leading with your feet. If you go in with your feet low, bit like studs up in soccer, that's where you get penalised. If you're going low and your intention is the football,
This is just a classic example of the AFL's reaction, overreacting to a couple of poor injuries. And the reason they do that is image of the game.
Yep.
They want kids to play. They don't want people to get injured. And they want to be seen to doing something to outlaw those injuries. But it's a 360-degree game.
Yep.
That is going to happen, unfortunately. I mean, you look at the... You know, what will they be legislating next against the, you know, Josh Battle, because he went to pick the ball up and, you know, Fife ran into him and unfortunately they clashed heads and Fife came off second best. I mean, it's an unfortunate part of footy. The sliding rule, sliding in with the Ds, it's just genuine rubbish. And it's just one of the many, many overreactions of the AFL to injuries. But unfortunately, the most precious commodity to the AFL is their image.
Mm.
And the image, even if... they need to be seen to doing something to make the game safer, even if it's at the detriment of the game, unfortunately. Mm. And that's exactly what this is, so that little old Bobby Big Balls is out there. Well, that's probably... I don't know if you'd have your name. I don't know if your surname would be Big Balls, but the Big Ball family, hopefully they're listening. They love the Cat Attack podcast. But if he wants to play...
It's only related to the Hay Balls.
Yes, they would be. Yes. So cousins to the No Balls. But if he wants to play footy, mum and dad want to know that the game is being made safer, but everybody knows that it's pretty much comical, and the players are obviously very frustrated with it.
Cats do it better. It looks as though Kelly is central to our game plan. If he's out, how should they replace him? Move Selwood or Duncan inside and bring Narkle in onto a wing, or play Guthrie through the middle using his pace and defensive attributes? It was a good win last week, but I thought the lack of run from the back was a concern. Hendo played his role well, but the back line was very tall. Individually, the key defenders are playing well, but it looks like we're really missing Tui. Clark is doing a great job, but needs support. Tui will come straight back into the side when he's ready.
Do you reckon he'll play in the VFL?
No, he'll come straight back in. I reckon they are leaning towards a training block to get him, you know.
A training block. He missed most of the preseason. Yeah. I would have thought you just sort of kick the Jew off and blow the pipes out a little bit in the VFL.
Mm.
Wow, that's a big call. Guthrie will have to go through the VFL, so he won't come in.
No. Yeah, I don't know who comes in if Kelly doesn't play.
Well, I don't know that anybody... Well,
see, Cunico was the travelling emergency last week.
Yeah, so that's disappointing for him because he's probably potentially next in line. Yeah, look, they'll find someone. It could be Narkle. And they might just shuffle the decks a little bit. Selwood probably has to play more around the ball.
Mm.
And Duncan, it becomes the, you know, danger field. You could even throw Ablett and Selwood combined, maybe spend a little bit more time on the ball than they have.
Love the podcast, fellas. Keep up the great work. Would like to get each of your predictions of the top four finishing team in order at season's end, as well as which player you think is most important structurally for the Cats at the moment. West Coast, GWS, Geelong, Collingwood.
Well, I'll take West Coast, Geelong, Collingwood. And I reckon fourth is completely up for grabs. I think the Tigers, unfortunately, after having an unbelievable run, it is going pear-shaped for the Tigers.
They're going to be 1-3, yeah, potentially.
They are in more trouble than the old early Explorers. I think GWS, still not ruling out Sydney. I know they've struggled a little bit, and they were probably pretty unimpressive against... the Blues, but I still think Sydney have got a couple of shots left in the chamber. So GWS or Sydney for fourth and all.
Cats and GWS from midday.
Yes.
So very, very special guest as part of the commentary team.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, Collingwood assistant coach Justin Longmuir, who is sort of seen, I think, in footy circles as potentially heir to the throne of Ross Lyon at some point down the track at Fremantle. Was really credited with the resurgence of Collingwood last year. We had him on a number of times, and he's decided to join the K-Rock crew full-time, so he's going to be involved with special comments for the remainder of 2019. Now, obviously, being in clubland, you're probably a little limited in what you can say, but it'll be great to get his analysis, game analysis of the Cats and GWS on Saturday. I'm really looking forward to that alongside Mark Neal.
Cam Mooney's back in the K-Rock family Friday night.
Yeah, he is too. He sent me a message, just a big thumbs up, ready to go, looking forward to it. So
Bulldogs and Collingwood.
Yeah, so Moon's getting back involved, and that'll be a good game. You think the Pies probably have a bit there. Saturday's going to be massive. and Cats GWS, as I mentioned there, to get a two-game buffer on GWS. I know it's only early, but two-game buffer is a two-game buffer. It's two back. It's two that GWS have to get back at some point. So it's a really, really big game for the Cats, and can they continue on? I mean, I think people now, the expectation suddenly, even in 3 weeks from Geelong fans, has gone through the roof. Mm. Can the kids keep delivering, or will they have a down day? At home obviously helps. And I'm really looking forward to Saturday, calling alongside Chuck Berry. So can't wait for that.
Yeah, I'm rested.
Yeah, you're doing something else, aren't you?
I'm rotated out.
What?
Sean Higgins will be part of the commentary Sunday.
Sunday, yes.
Hope. So the macabre in me says, gee, if they're 0-4, a lot of people will be listening to K-Rock. A lot of the media will be listening to what Sean Higgins has got to say from 2 o'clock on
Sunday.
Oh, look,
he's pretty measured, Sean. It's a little sort of concerning for North. I think they've given it a red-hot crack in all three games and lost all three. They haven't been diabolical by any stretch. They've just been caught short by better opposition. So it's been an interesting year for the already a little bit of heat too on Brad Scott. So interesting year for the Roos, and we'll hear firsthand from Sean on Sunday.
Meg McDonald won the Geelong AFLW Best and Fairest. Congratulations to Meg.
Yes, well done to Meg.
Congratulations.
Tommy Stewart was pretty happy about that.
Yes, defender.
Yes.
Yep. And the VFL boys are at home 1 o'clock Sunday. I'm going to go and have a look at that while you boys are calling the action up at Marvel, which will be very entertaining. Hey, Benny, I've got one last one from Kenjo on the Big Footy.
Correct. What have we got?
Can you guys sign off when you're about to wrap up the podcast episodes? Too many times it just ends unexpectedly.
Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to the Cat Attack podcast on iTunes.